Welcome to Relative Powers. We are a podcast about web development, web design, and that sort of thing. I am your host, Mark Phoenix, and your other host is Ben Hutchings.
Hello.
I feel like I should get you to say your actual name. So when I say that, you should like chime in with your name. Or is that a bit too much? Like, jeez. Hospital radio DJ.
We could try it. Let's try it again.
Okay. Welcome to Relative Paths. We are a podcast about web development, web design, and that sort of thing. I'm your host, Mark Phoenix.
And I'm your host, other host, Ben Hutchings.
We're trying that as a new opening to the podcast to pile as much cheese
as possible.
Because cheese is delicious and you can never have too much cheese. Except if you've
got health tip.
Yeah. If you're lactose intolerant, then maybe kind of, you know.
Yeah. Or got heart disease or.
Yeah. Or you're cheese allergic.
Yep.
Or something.
Maybe. Suffer from bad dreams.
Yeah. Or you're a mouse and you're looking at a trap right now. But anyway, this podcast is all about when stuff goes wrong, like that intro, and about making mistakes and how to deal with them. We are recording, what episode number is this going to be? 31?
I think it's going to be 31, I think.
Okay, so we've just recorded episode 30. We generally record two episodes in one go. And episode 30 is a re-recording. We tried it last week and it was a bit all over the shop. And we ended up with some audio problems as well as some kind of host problems. And so we didn't have, our guest was recording himself and that went wrong. And we just kind of, we tried to change the format and it didn't really work. And I think we kind of ended up taking the guest a little bit by surprise because we changed things and didn't really tell him. So we just re-recorded it and we think it's gone really well. Although Skype's down today.
Yeah, that took some, we had to think quickly about that, didn't we? We ended up actually listening to him over FaceTime audio, but he recorded himself.
Yeah.
We recorded ourselves and then it was all right, but it was a bit of a last minute.
Yeah, and he was communicating to us on his phone, and I think he had his phone on his lap, and
yeah,
he was complaining by the end of the podcast it was red hot. So I think about burning a hole through his leg. But yes, we had to think on our feet a bit then. And so this is actually going to be a little bit of a fast and loose episode because we just wanted to talk about that whilst it all happened. So we're talking about like when things go wrong.
We normally have show notes, and we haven't got show notes for this episode at all. So have we even started a timer?
I don't think we
have. No, carry on talking. I'll start a timer.
Okay, you start a timer because my phone is on emergency power mode, on low power mode, which is a new thing that you can do in iOS 9 on the iPhone. But it's difficult to come out of, you were saying.
A bit annoying. I think they should have put it. What's the thing at the bottom called? Not notification center. But when you swipe up, you've got your airplane mode, Wi-Fi, do not disturb. And you should have a little low power or normal power button there.
Yeah. So hopefully, who's the head of Apple? Johnny Ive?
Don't know.
Hopefully he's listening in. So hopefully by the time this goes out, then
you would have fixed it. And yeah. You'll have 9.0.1.1.
Yeah. Bracket. Cheers, Ben and Mark. And also the podcast app is a little bit wrong.
What am I doing?
I think you're starting a timer.
Right. Done.
So mistakes. First of all, should we talk about our mistakes? Because this is a podcast which could be heard by potential customers. When other developers make mistakes and are public about them, then that could be seen by potential customers. So should we talk about that sort of thing? Does it harm one's professional profile, do you think, if you're...
Oh, yeah, I don't know. You could say, well, what's the likelihood of them listening? But I suppose if you were a very big name, a household name, you might get heard, or someone might say, oh yeah, don't employ him, or don't get him to do that, or her to do that, because I heard them talking on that podcast about how bad they are at things.
Because it's interesting to listen to other podcasters like in the web industry who are a bit more well-known, who do talk about mistakes they made and talk about how annoying possibly certain clients are. And they kind of, and they can often even be, they don't name them exactly, but I think if a particular client was listening,
yeah, they'd know who they were.
Yeah,
I think, and that
even sometimes people,
well, I think we've done that actually. Well, yeah.
yeah, sort of change the names to protect the innocent, of course. But I guess if somebody's very, very high profile, then the mistakes will be apparent anyway. Because I was thinking of, I don't know who developed the new healthcare site in America,
right? Is that like a Medicaid thing, or is that, am I way behind?
Something on the Affordable Care Act, and there was a website developed so American citizens could get health insurance through it. And quite famously, it had some difficult times to begin with.
Right.
And I think, actually, the code, a lot of the code is up on GitHub, so they tried to do a lot of coding in the open and whatnot and use best practices, but it still went a bit wrong. And it was a massively public problem. And I'm not sure, I think in something, I guess if something like that happened, you're kind of compelled to talk about a mistake, aren't you? Because...
Yeah, because everyone knew it happened anyway. Yeah, you may as well try and explain it a bit maybe, or learn from it.
Yeah, so you're doing a bit of damage limitation. And I guess it, for freelancers, if you make a mistake on a project and your client knows about it, then there's no reason to not talk to the client about it and talk through it. Because, I mean, I think sometimes in lots of industries, and maybe even personally as well, we feel like to maintain credibility, we have to be right 100% of the time.
Yeah, you do get people that are, I can be a bit like this, you sort of serial confessors though, don't you?
Yeah.
I walked Jem to work today and I walked back through the park. And this is an aside, but it just reminded me. And there was a lady walking her dog. And she was quite young and she had one of those little stick things that you put a ball in the end and you throw the ball with it.
I know.
And she threw it and it landed in the top of a tree and it didn't come out. And the dog ran to the tree and jumped to the bottom, was jumping up and down. And she was like, oh no, oh, I'm so rubbish. And then she ran over to the tree and she looked at it and she shook the tree and leaves a bit, you know, the whatever they are. What are they called? The bits that come out the side of a tree and have leaves on them.
Branches?
Branches. She shook the branches a bit and eventually it came down, but she was like, oh goodness, I'm so rubbish. And when I looked around, she wasn't talking to anyone and I wasn't really close enough for her, I think, to have been saying it for my benefit. So I don't know, that's totally unrelated to anything, but maybe a serial confessor.
Yeah,
oh, I'm rubbish.
Yeah,
and look what I did wrong.
Yeah, because it feeds into some things that we talked about before, like imposter syndrome. And the idea in the previous episode that's gone out, we talked a little bit about the idea of unicorns. And I think there is this kind of expectation that people have to be experts in everything.
Mm.
And there's often kind of this pressure when a new technology comes on the scene. People think, oh, no, there's another thing I have to learn in order to be competent. So the potential for feeling as if we've made mistakes and the potential for error, I guess, is pretty... It's always there, sort of in this kind of industry. So how do you, see, it's difficult because I don't want to get you to confess, but how do you deal with it? Because everybody makes mistakes. I think I mentioned on a number of previous podcasts, it's quite, if you're new and you have this expectation that you have to code correctly all the time, it's quite reassuring to watch situations where other people are live coding or they're doing tutorials and they get a little bit of something wrong because you expect people to be able to almost code telepathically, to just will code onto the screen and things and have it all be perfect. But seeing it kind of, seeing the fact that it can be a bit messy and hearing other developers talk about coding something and going back a little bit later and thinking, oh my goodness, my code's terrible.
I think there's quite a difference though between mistakes and doing something that could have been improved on and you could have done differently.
Okay.
Like when you build something in a certain way and you maybe even know at the time, I could do this better. I either should have made more time for this or allowed more time, or I would have preferred to have done it this differently or approached this differently, but I don't have time for it, or there isn't budget for it, or I'm not worried enough about the project because it's not going to be around for long enough to do it to the level I want to do it. I don't know if that's necessarily a mistake, because I'm thinking of mistakes where you do something that is wrong, that either you get picked up on because you've either knowingly or unknowingly done something that's quite either detrimental to the project, to a group of people. For example, recently a few times, I've been thinking a lot about accessibility. Previously, we were talking to Ben and he mentioned it and at one point said, you know, if you don't, you should be. Because he was talking about the Slack group, a Slack accessibility group. And then when I went up to the last WordPress meet in Birmingham, Johnny A was talking about, and Josh Hillier, I think, were talking about accessibility and how there isn't really any excuse for just ignoring it. And I feel that is a mistake that I've made.
Okay.
Is just thinking, well, my client says it's just for a certain group of people and a certain size kind of group of people, and that they wouldn't really want to pay any extra for me to spend time making this more accessible than very, very simple, basic accessibility. But that's probably a mistake. Because it's like almost like the moral obligation, I think, with I'm starting to feel. I don't want to suddenly get on a soapbox about this because it's something I'm still formulating the ideas for. But I'm starting to feel that if just because you're not told to do something a certain way, if you're the expert, you know, you should maybe step in and say, well, it should be done this way and this is where I normally do it and I would like to do it this way or I will be doing it this way.
So almost kind of a mistake by omission.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I was thinking of sin of omission. That's what it's almost like. It's almost like a moral thing. So there are those kind of mistakes. Go on.
And I think I was initially thinking about the obvious kind, like you code something and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't become immediately apparent. So so your project goes live and you discover that you've put the wrong phone number on your site.
I've done that.
We'll talk about that in a sec, because there's an interesting podcast. I don't think it's the Businessology podcast, but it's one of those that I used to love listening to, but it downloaded in the incorrect format for iOS, so I couldn't listen to it anymore, which is really frustrating. It was one of the earliest podcasts I listened to, but it was two developers. I think it was one of the co-founders of the EngineWorks web agency in the States. But I might be wrong. And they spent the whole podcast talking about mistakes they made. And one of them was about the wrong phone number on a website and caused a massive problems. And there was loads of other little problems, actually quite major mistakes they made. And it was at a time when I was kind of finding things a little difficult in terms of development, because you have that initial thing where you just start to learn things and you kind of think, oh, great. And then you kind of... there's a graph that somebody made, and I think they call it like the Valley of Despair, where you kind of get to this point in your confidence where you come up against like coding principles and things like that, and you realize like that you've done a few things, and you think, oh, I can do this, and then you kind of go around the next corner, and you find there's so much more that you've got to take into account, and you can get a bit. But it was at this point I was listening to that podcast, and it was just so reassuring and quite interesting that they were talking about mistakes being a pretty high profile agency who was still getting work. So that's kind of interesting. But anyway, but you mentioned there was a time when you put the wrong phone number on.
No, it wasn't. It was very similar to that. But okay. I was thinking that because the repercussion is because I thought you were going to refer to this. I'm pretty sure I heard a podcast about someone talking about getting a phone number wrong and then it going kind of legal. Talking it was to do with contracts. It may well have been the stuff of nonsense because it was when Anna Debenham and Andy Clark were talking about the contract killer contract, and I think they had like a three-part on it, and they were saying about sometimes almost covering yourself for when something goes wrong. But it was, in that case, it was to do with having a phone number wrong so that no one was contacted through a website for quite a long period of time. Yeah, I made really angry with myself for something I did a few months back. I was asked to change the primary domain name of a client's website. They went from a .co.uk to a .com. And then they're going multi-language, and we're still building that now, but they were going .com as their primary. Did the switch, and it was fine. And I get a copy, a CC, of their contact form emails that go, just so I can check they're getting contact. And they get a couple a week. And, you know, it's normally it's a wedding photographer. And there's people asking about their wedding, and can you shoot it? Anyway, it turned out that the client wasn't getting these, and they hadn't been getting them for about 6 weeks, and just sent me a quick mail saying, I'm not getting any contact forms. And I sort of replied, oh, I am. I'm getting the copies. I've got them. Oh, could you forward them? Yeah, fine. So why am I not getting them? And a lot of them are time related because people are wanting to book things in, and if they've not done it, it turned out I was so confident at first. Well, it's working. It's working. It's fine. What I hadn't vouched for is the MX setup on the server, because their email, mine was external. So mine was going out to me. Theirs was just falling into a mailbox, a black hole that they don't check because they use Google Mail. So I haven't explained that very well. And anyone who's worked with Google Mail and the idea of internal and external mail exchanges will see what I mean. But there's a potential to think you've set up something properly. Problem is, what you might call a rookie mistake. You know, I've probably made that mistake first in about 2003. And since then... know all about it, but I was just working quickly and overconfidence, and I had to reply with an email explaining what had happened, not massively technically, there's no need, but just say it is a mistake I made with your mail routing, it was falling into a black hole, I was getting it, you weren't. Basically I kind of said, how do you want to be compensated?
Okay.
Yeah, and what we've negotiated was that there was the remainder of the job that I'm building at the moment, the remaining cost of the job, I agreed to waive. Now, that's quite big, but the loss of work, it's a client I've had for a long time and I hope to continue working with in the future, and they've already given me, like, paid me like an upfront on the job I'm doing, so I've waived the final part of the job. Now, that's just an agreement we've come to, but it felt like it needed compensation. I've lost them potentially a lot of work through a tiny mistake, and it felt, there was no question of trying to cover it up, and no question of trying to pull the wool, because it was just my fault, and it needed to be, yes, I messed up.
How did you feel? How did you feel about it?
And really, really rubbish.
And how did the client react?
They were very good, but their first contact from me about the problem, after I knew what the problem was an immediate admission and an offer of compensation. So right. Their reaction was, okay, these things happen. And yes, if it's okay with you, we will take you up on your offer and thank you for that. And well, let's hope that kind of thing doesn't happen again. And thank you. Oh, and so here's the other assets you wanted. You know, it was just straight back onto the forget it's happened and we're okay. But
yeah. See, things, what I imagine, whatever it is that they do, they've probably made mistakes as well, haven't they?
Maybe they've once developed some films and found that they've got, imagine photographing a wedding and then actually...
Probably happened.
It must have done.
Probably happened.
Nothing comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think in those sort of situations it can be, I mean, honestly, I think it's always the best policy in these situations because, first of all, you know, you can sleep at night. And secondly...
That's a big part of it, actually. Yeah. Being able to just almost admitting to yourself is almost more important than the client. And that sounds a bit zen. Must admit your mistakes to yourself.
But it's true. I think you kind of, if you have that, you probably take that forward into your next projects. It probably makes you feel a little bit shifty. And I think you sort of the slightly more ungallant way of looking at it is that you could get found out. And it's much worse to get found out and for your client to find out that you have swept something under the carpet. Because I don't think it's probably not possible in lots of situations to come back from that. Mm. I imagine the same as we would if as a developer, you're dealing with a designer who kind of makes some terrible mistake and they sort of sweep it all under the carpet, or you're working with another developer who kind of messes something up and doesn't tell you.
Yeah.
Or kind of blames it on something or someone else and you find out that it's their fault, you probably wouldn't work with that person again.
And knowing how much word of mouth matters in our industry, we talked about that before.
Yeah.
That actually probably would it would continue to have an effect going forward.
Yeah. Whereas if you made a mistake, can you just phone someone up and said, oh, sorry, I messed up on this particular thing. How can I sort it out?
Mm.
It's a bit of a sting for you, but it's over with.
Yeah.
I guess, isn't it? So I guess that's what we would say is like the first sort of thing to take away is like if you've got a mistake, if you've made a mistake, best policy is to admit it.
Try and correct it or think of a way of correcting it that's acceptable to you and to the client. That's not the only mistake I've made. And there have been times when I've made a mistake. Oh, that's not the only mistake I've made. Of course it's not. What I mean
three.
Is... Yeah, I mean three. I can give you the dates.
Once I had a fish with red wine. Oh, it's dreadful.
But there have been times when the mistakes have been a similar sort of thing, and I've said it, and they've said, oh, don't worry about it. You know.
Okay, yeah.
So you don't know that... It's good to offer some sort of compensation, even if it's time... Money is a difficult one to offer as compensation if you're a freelancer, especially if you're self-employed or like a sole trader. So I'm a sole trader. So at some point I must get set up properly. Or I say properly, but set up as a limited company. But at the moment, you know, I am my liability. So basically, if someone wanted to sue me, they're like suing.
Go for it.
Any
listeners would like to sue
me. You can end up with my DVDs, some of Gems. Vodka. Lego.
Can I see you just enough to get a couple of shots of vodka?
You can if you want.
Cool. But yeah, actually, that's a thing which we probably won't go into now because we are planning on doing an episode on contracts at some point.
Yeah.
So also things like how you set your business up, whether to be a sole trader or a partnership or
I need
a
to learn from
company.
You.
Well, I've got a limited.
Teach me.
I've got a limited company which is dormant at the minute.
Yeah.
So that means each year I just need, because I set it up because I wanted to get the name. I wanted to get Pixelsmiths Limited. And I thought it seemed like the kind of thing that a person would go for. I was quite surprised to get it, actually. And it turns out there's an American company called Pixelsmiths, and annoyingly, they have the Twitter, which they haven't tweeted for a good number of years. So I direct messaged them and asked, hey, are you still using it? And haven't heard anything from them. So
it used to be that if you had a Twitter account, this is early days though, but if you had a Twitter account and you let it go dormant or you just killed it, no one could re-register it. And they must have changed that policy, because I had Hutchings, because I'm Ben Hutchings. I had Hutchings, which was great, I thought. But then I had some sort of flip out and decided I didn't want to use social media again, and I closed all sorts of social media accounts in about 2009. When I came to open them again in 2010, Hutchings was re-registered by someone.
Interesting.
And they don't tweet. I've contacted them, but they don't tweet. And I don't know. They must have changed the policy. I don't know whether it was someone that maybe worked in some part of the industry and was able to just get... It might be fine. You might be able to just re-register stuff. But initially you couldn't. And I think it was to stop people pretending to be someone else, effectively.
I think that's it. I think there is, because I had a look into it, and I think you can't just ask for something that's dormant. I don't think so, anyway. We'll pop it in the show notes, actually, because I think there's some documentation on the Twitter policy.
Okay.
But if you think somebody's impersonating you, then you can ask to have it re-registered. And I think what some people have done is try to come under that sort of... that mechanism.
Okay.
So they've been like, oh, this person's got this name that I've got and they're impersonating me, even though I've only just registered this name. Yeah. So I didn't want to try that because it's a little bit kind of, it's a little bit duplicitous.
Yeah,
and again,
yeah.
Like if you do something like that and you get away with it, you might, depending on how kind of, if your conscience is
dead,
is that way or dead, then you might excuse yourself. You might think it's some way of getting around a bureaucracy. But again, if you get discovered, then that's certainly not great. We have waffled on for a bit. What we're going to do is we are going to pause there and have a tool star. And in part two, we are going to talk about some part two type stuff.
Which we will probably think of the topic I'm talking about a little tool star.
Or in part two. So this is our tool star section. And I think Ben has one for us this week. Well, I know Ben has one for us this week. What do you have?
Because I told you. You
did tell me.
I have a little app called Spectacle App, and it's an open source application for allowing you to set window sizes for applications based on shortcuts. And it's for Mac OS. And the reason I got it was I recently, my old monitor died. And I think the backlight went or something. And I bought a new one, which was much higher resolution and slightly larger than my old one. And I suddenly found that I was having to crane my neck to read left to right across the screen.
Okay.
No, it's just with the resolution it was, I was closer than I had been with the older one. And then I found that it was so wide that I didn't want a lot of my applications to be that filling that much of the screen.
Is that wide?
That wide.
Are you sure you didn't accidentally find yourself in a cinema and you've got a bit confused yeah. watching The Matrix?
Trying to develop on IMAX. No, it's not massive. Do you know what? It is only, I can't remember what size it is, 29 inch or something, but it's just because I was so used to a smaller screen. What this application does is if a window has got focus, you can say, for example, Alt Command right arrow, and it will snap it to the right half of the screen. Or command left arrow, left half of the screen, for example. So if you use command tab, like a lot of people do, to switch quickly between things, my idea of speed is to get everything as much as possible on the keyboard. If I can spend 45 minutes without touching the mouse, that's great. Because especially if you're switching between, if you've got something like a build process building in the background, you're not having to run any build tools. You're just switching between, in my case, Atom and a browser that's doing some live refresh or something. So I'm just switching between two applications for extended periods of time. The being able to open a terminal window and snap it to the top left of the screen with a shortcut, which would be Alt Command up arrow left arrow, you know, that sort of thing. Once you've learned them, like if you're used to using shortcuts, I can't recommend it enough. Mm. And it's open source, and there's a GitHub repository, so you can, you know, alert whoever it is that develops it of issues, and maybe even, you know, enhance it a little bit.
And can you leave reviews as well?
On the site. Well, the site, I think, is a GitHub Pages site. Let's just check. It's a GitHub repository. with a GitHub Pages site. So there's no reviews functionality on it, but you could leave an issue. When I say it's an app, it's not on the App Store. It's just an application.
Right.
Mac OS only, I believe. But I love it. Very small, runs in the taskbar, not the taskbar, the menu bar, icon bar. Don't know what you call it, in the top of the screen all the time. But it takes up very, very little resource.
Great stuff for big screens.
Okay, sounds good. I think I've got a similar thing for Windows, which is Display Fusion, which is a paid application for dealing with multiple screens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good for extending desktops and extending toolbars and things like that. And there are little kind of tabs almost that you can put, or buttons you can put on the browser. For functionality, so you can put a button on which switches a window from this monitor to the next monitor, and then maximizes it or minimizes it or things like that. And I think some of that functionality, like if you wanted to snap a window to a side of a screen, I think some of that is baked into Windows already.
So. Yeah, if you drag a window to the left, you get like a little hot area, don't you, that shows you the snap. But is it mouse-based always?
It's mouse-based and keyboard-based.
So
if you press the Windows key and, like, left, it will snap, and the Windows key right, it will snap. And I think for up and down, actually, but it's just I've not really had much cause to use it. But
I believe the next version of Mac OS will have it baked in, because I think someone said in one of the issues they mentioned about compatibility with the next version. So this application may well become obsolete. But for now, it fills a really good need.
Yeah. It's interesting how much development of OSs is done by the community, kind of almost by proxy. Because I think if an app becomes popular and the people that make the OS, you can see them just sort of peering over the wall and being like,
how
does that work? Let me just get this notepad. Okay. And you see these things kind of going into the OS. So certain apps end up having to sort of go away because it's been sort of baked in, so. Mm. But I mean, you know, that's just I guess that's the way of things. But anyway, so Spectacles is your tool stuff for the week.
It is.
So this is part two. We're just going to race into it and see what happens. In part one, we talked a bit about the mechanics of it. So what to do in terms of your relationship with a client if you make a mistake, regardless of the kind of mistakes that you make, whether it is a mistake of omission. I guess that's a slightly different thing, kind of not making your client site accessible, I guess, kind of falls under a slightly different sort of umbrella, I guess, than maybe the kind of mistakes that we're talking about. We're talking about the kind of stuff when you just code something wrong, like with a contact form. I did a similar thing, actually, a very similar thing with a client. Recently with a contact form I think it might be exactly the same problem because it was coming through to me when it was my email address. It's just a PHP mailer script that I'd set up. Came through to me, okay. I think his email client wasn't set up to receive that kind of input, so it just wasn't sort of getting to him. And I sort of went to the server and all these emails were like, hey, help us. These are refugee emails. But I wanted to talk about how you deal with it yourself. How, in terms of your own sort of morale, almost, if you make a mistake, how you bounce back from it. Because I imagine the people who developed the Affordable Care website in America might have been like licking their wounds afterwards. I'm sure some of the problems are development problems, and some of them could be on a massive project like that. I guess there are lots of different forces at play. So I imagine dealing with mistakes or things that, once rolled out, don't work properly. A lot of that can be internal politics that you deal with, which is kind of an interesting thing to talk about as well. I think Ben last week was talking about working on projects where there were like 30 or 40 developers. I can't imagine.
I can't imagine it, no.
That'd be like, because you imagine sort of designers working on that too. But again, I think he was saying that when we spoke to him on a previous occasion that some of the work is quite compartmentalized. So people know, well, of course people would have to. People are working on, this guy's working on this subject and this girl's working on this thing and you know, so they've got their very specific areas. So I guess it's probably more easy to control in that respect, but it just seems like a bit nightmarish to...
I don't know how I'd do it because maybe it's being a bit of... You couldn't be worried about control at all, could you? I suppose what you'd have to do is own your area and be worried about doing your part properly. Because, well, it did sound from Ben's, from what he was saying, was that everyone can get involved in the process and make sure it moves forward and develops and flags up any impediments and that kind of thing. But I can just imagine it being a nightmare to manage.
Because even if everybody agrees, just getting 45 people to say yes to something.
Yeah, so it probably probably isn't by committee then.
No,
can't be,
no,
can it?
I imagine not.
But it must just be task based. Right, you go and build that, you go and build that. Feedback how you get on.
And there is one kind of like the octopus is in the middle, kind of like pulling all the strands together.
I think Ben is the octopus then.
Ben is the octopus. I kind of spoke about people being web pandas yesterday. I don't know if that's something that we've
heard. I love it. I've never heard it before. I think it's brilliant. It's the opposite of a unicorn, right?
Somebody that over-specializes
and then goes nearly extinct and sits eating bamboo.
Because pandas kind of, you know, should diversify and, like, you know, eat burgers and stuff. And, I don't know, kale. Kale's in. If pandas were to eat kale, then they would be everywhere. You go to a kind of, I don't know, go to Notting Hill in London, and it would be just, you know, lousy with pandas.
Yeah, eating kale and quinoa. Or is it quinoa? Is that how you say it?
Quinoa.
Quinoa, not quinoa.
It's like
when I was calling Yosemite Yosemite. It's terribly embarrassing, and thankfully I'm not being recorded and haven't admitted that in public.
I did it with hyperbole.
Hyperbole. Yeah.
I remember I remember being very young and speaking to, and like thinking that I knew everything and saying, "Oh yes, I think you'll find that's hyperbole."
Yes, and yeah, someone once said instead of course, they said coarse. They were reading course, and it was hyphenated across the line, you know, at the end of a line, and they were like, co-ass. Anyway.
I like Kit. Somebody thought Kit and Caboodle was Kit and Caboodle. Which I think is much nicer. I think a Kit and Caboodle was me the kind of Caboodle I could get behind. Anyway, we are wandering off topic.
This is what happens when we don't have show notes.
It is, yeah. We are just wandering around in the woods at the minute. But, so with mistakes, how is it that you feel after a mistake, and how do you ever find it's a knock to your confidence, or do you just take it in your stride as just kind of part of the, you know, the to and fro of being?
No, I do, that's a shame. We'll one day, I hope to one day get Gem a bit involved and just get some sound bites from her, because a few times I want to say, oh, you should ask Gem about that, because I'll come downstairs, I'm like, I'm such an idiot, and she's like, well, what? And I'll tell her, she goes, well, don't worry, it's not a big deal. I'm an idiot and I shouldn't be doing this. And I often say, because it's comical, I should become a window cleaner, because I realise that you and I could just swap places. I could just take your job. Can I have you around?
Yeah.
I've got to buy it, haven't I?
Spend a good deal of... I'll leave a gap just in case we want to cut this out of the podcast for people. If you're eating right now, just be aware. I spent, I think, a week and a half ago, about an hour washing dog poop off my hands. And off my hose wheel. I use a reach and wash system, which basically means you run a hose. You've got a hose run on the van with a tank on the van with water, and you run a hose from the van to the house, and it's 100 meters worth. So basically what it means is when you have to wind that hose in, anything that hundreds of 100 meters of hose touches gets on your hands. And my hose decided it was going to touch some dog poop. And so I got dog poop on my hands.
And then presumably then sort of smeared around some of the rest of the hose as well.
It was. And so I had to clean the hose. I had to bleach. I bleached my hands. I was that dismayed. Don't do this. I poured bleach onto my hands because I was so unhappy about it. But do not do that. But I had to clean the hose and things like that. And so whenever somebody says, oh man, I wish it was I did something simple like your job, I'm like, okay, yeah. Off you go. But anyway,
yeah,
but you've had that. And I think when you came back from the web meetup, when they were talking about accessibility, I think you had a bit
last
of a
week.
Yeah, you had a bit of a moment then.
That
didn't
was
you?
Bad. Yeah, I mean, this we're not talking about what's it called?
Imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome.
I think it falls and it kind of comes into the same area.
Yeah.
It
was really bad. And it's interesting actually how I got out of that, because I think it's the worst I've ever. Some people talk about having imposter syndrome really badly and it being debilitating. And I'd never experienced it like that. But it was suddenly, there is always the worry that one's getting, well, I don't know if it's just in it, it can't be just in this industry, it must be everywhere. There's always the worry that you are just getting a bit old, or you've not specialised enough, or you've not diversified enough, or you've something's got and you've not done it, and actually, goodness me, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing this job. That can some, that happens like to a degree, but last week, oh man, I in the end, Jen was home and she said like, let's just go for a coffee. Because I was not getting anything done. We went and sat for, and had a coffee.
So was this like the day after when you were trying to get back to work?
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily to do with going to that meet. It was just that then it was just some other stuff as well and things about other another job that hadn't really gone particularly well and something that had gone very over budget and I'd had to switch around on some jobs, which meant I couldn't bill one that I really needed to bill when I needed to bill it because I had to finish another one to help someone out. And that's always very difficult because it almost says, please, I've got a problem. Can you help me with this delivery date? It has to be tomorrow, even though we agreed it'd be next week. But and you know that but they're not going to be able to pay you for four weeks, whereas the one you were going to work on was going to be was an upfront payment or something. And when it's one of those things, I know this is very granular and a bit maybe a bit candid and a bit open, but there are times when you do have it is down to cash flow. And last week was one of those times. and then I went to this thing. I thought, actually, it's really positive. I had some really good chats there with some of the people that we met there and the person that took me, positive stuff. But also, I came back with a shed load of things that I thought, right, I need to learn that, I need to learn this, I need to do that, I need to change how I do this, I need to change accessibility, I really need to concentrate on it, I've been ignoring it or just doing the token service for too long. Plus this sort of payment thing, plus I don't know whatever else was going on. But in the end, I just needed to achieve something. So reset with going for a coffee and a chat about anything but work and came back and thought, right, I want to learn to do something new today. And I started to investigate this accessibility thing and I retrofitted some accessibility to a couple of old sites that I should have done it on. They were fairly recently. I should have done it. I just didn't. And that made me feel better. Felt like I learned something. I'd achieved something. And I also had something to take into new projects from then on. And also sat and watched a couple of Laracast videos and furthered my learning of Laravel, which I had been learning in earnest again. I say again because I did sort of get into grips with Laravel 4, but then I wanted to get back on the wagon. On the wagon? Off the wagon?
On the wagon.
On the wagon.
Yeah, in this case, yeah.
To get back into it. And that had slipped off because I got so busy. Right. So it was like a case of thinking... Right, I'm either going to get nothing done probably for the rest of this week because I'm just going to pile into all the jobs are going to pile into themselves and I'm going to think, oh, forget it, I need a weekend, or try and force myself to focus on something positive, achieve something. And then the next day it was sort of all right, really. It was good. Okay. But bad. Never had it that bad.
Okay. Just a combination of things.
I think so, yeah.
I think sometimes that can be the way of things, like you... When things happen unexpectedly or when a number of things kind of collide at the same time, that can really take you by surprise. Sometimes if you do have like something major that you're dealing with, you are focused on dealing with that thing. So even...
And if you work for someone else, see, there are times when I think I felt similar when working in a studio, but having your manager or the boss or even the client get in contact with you directly and say, I need that then, you're a bit like, oh, right, well, there's the clarity of having a delivery date or something, but when you're left, which you work alone, or if you are in control of your own time.
And you've got to do your own crisis management.
Yeah, that can be a problem because you haven't got someone else to. That's why I would urge, this comes back to, we've touched on this when we talked about that, the Geek Mental Health Week, when we talked about urging people to have someone that they can, or just talk to someone about it, even just throwing your list of problems past someone, and they'll normally sift them out and say, oh, okay, that does... Could you do that next week? And you'd be like, oh, yeah, I could, but I wanted to do it today. Yeah, but could you do it next week? And would that allow you to? And someone else can almost sift through your problems so much easier. Mm. Also helps having a whiteboard. That's really helped. Just whacking things up on a whiteboard and drawing lines between them and scrubbing ones out and putting big red circles around one and little green circles around another.
Yeah, there's something quite interesting about that. I guess with all the technology, you tend to put everything on your phone or on your iPad.
Yeah.
But I guess there's something good about
it. But putting it up on a wall.
Yeah.
Or writing it on... People do it with post-it notes, don't they? Writing each little granular, tiny little problem or thing they task on post-it notes and start moving them around on a wall until they've got something achievable.
I guess there's something a bit more tactile about having something tangible. But yeah, but your point though about having someone to talk to, because I think with sometimes with social media, somebody said something like comparing your behind the scenes with everybody else's highlight reel.
Yeah.
So people will tend to, not everybody, but people can often tend to kind of want to project a certain version of themselves on social media. And, you know, if you peer behind the scenes, you find that things are just as chaotic as everybody else's. So I guess I think that's something you have to watch for, is if you judge yourself by the echo chamber of Twitter, then, you know, it doesn't always go well
for you. It's not realistic, is it?
Yeah, but if you do have people that you've reached out to in sort of the web community or the web industry that you can do this, you can run things by, then I guess it's good to have that kind of support from somebody else who has been through the same thing.
I find it useful, though, even people who aren't at all in the industry.
Yeah.
Because the good thing about them is that when you're explaining the problem to them, you don't have to answer then 30 sub follow-up questions where someone says, well, why did you do that? Yeah, but how did you do the so-and-so? And what did you... It's just, oh, I've got a job that's this big and it's going to take this long, and I've got another one that's really tiny, but it really needs to be done and there's no money in it and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you can kind of just quickly put labels on things and people can help you sift through it or sort through it in that way.
Yeah, it's good to have an outsider's perspective.
Yeah, and downtime is really important as well. Just forcing yourself away.
Yeah. Because I think what we do is important in terms of the fact that somebody's paying you money, and often the website is supporting their business, and that means a lot to people. However, having help from somebody in the industry is good because it helps to bring perspective to your problems, because you know you're not the only person who has run into these problems. But then if you go to somebody outside of the industry, it gives you even more perspective because it reminds you that you're just building websites.
Yeah.
In the end, you're not
saving lives.
No, you're not a brain surgeon who's kind of, you know, wondering whether to kind of snip that thing or not. or you're not defusing a bomb and wondering whether to cut the red wire or the blue one. Tip is to decide to cut one and then change your mind at the last minute. Always seems to work.
Always works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Would we know if it didn't work?
We probably don't.
No. How many films have been made that have not ended up, that have just been vaporized?
I said.
Whole team, director.
I said, cut the red one.
Yeah.
We used to, and back in my town in Devizes, there was the ordnance unit used to, its route used to be through our town. And for a period of about 6 months, you'd see the van race through like once a month.
Mm.
And, you know, when you see a kind of, I'm still a bit of a kid, whenever I see a fire engine, I'm like, oh, fire engine. And then I hear the sirens and think, oh, bomb disposal. Oh, okay. Oh. Something's happening. I think there are a number of like World War II, like unexploded bombs in the area. I think this is totally off topic. But anyway, but it does remind you that there are more serious about that at the office. As a bomb disposal like operative, it's probably worse than a bad day at the office. If you're trying to build somebody's like e-commerce solution, and I guess if you make a mistake, just talking to your peers and colleagues in the industry, in people on your team or the freelancers, if you're a freelancer, is good to help you to get over it.
We got followed by Cheltenham co-working space today.
Oh, okay. Hello, Cheltenham co-working space.
Really pleased to see that that there is one, because sometimes I think I just need to work in a room with people and it's every Monday they're trying a little pilot and they're popping up all over the country, aren't they? And I think it's a great idea. Normally there's some sort of payment, even if it's just for a coffee pot or whatever, but it's like a little bit of room rent or a bit of Wi-Fi rent. But this one, they're doing it every Monday until 2016 as a test.
Might give that a try. Might give it a try. If we do give
it's
that a
next
try.
Monday. I'm going to probably try next Monday and just go. Okay. And it's free from 9 to 5 at the moment, just to see if it works as a pilot.
Okay.
And I think you go and you've got Wi-Fi and there's probably a drinks machine and a little tuck shop or something. And it's part of a community centre.
Okay.
But the idea of actually having to go somewhere to work and maybe having other people to bounce ideas off, I don't know whether it'll be like that, so we'll have to see.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's next time we record, I might get some feedback. But yeah. I know it's a bit local. Oh, local news for local people. but there are these co-working spaces all over the country now.
There'll be something like it. I mean, wherever you are, there'll most likely be something like it. And if there isn't one, then maybe you could set one up.
Yeah, in your front room.
Yeah. Invite strangers to your house. Yeah. Nothing will go bad if you try that.
But I mean, hospitality.
Yeah. I'm sure. Welcome, everybody. You're not an axe murderer, are you? Come on in. Nice axe. But it's... But no, I think it's important.
Gestures don't work on...
They work for me.
Air guitar doesn't work on a podcast, does it?
I don't think it works at all. So there's no guitar there. So... I guess our takeaway would be, if you make a mistake, come clean. It's interesting. I was listening to another podcast who...
Traitor.
And I think it might have been Dan Moore. And he was saying that the way they used to work is email was when things were going well and phone calls were for when things were going badly. Mm-hmm. But he changed his perspective because he realized he was trading the client that every time he rang, they were like, uh-oh, it's a problem. So I guess having a good communication with your client, and I think although it's probably easier to hide behind an email or a text when a thing goes wrong, it's probably better to phone somebody up and talk them through it.
Probably.
I imagine it's probably.
I'm not sure. What do you think? I can understand the idea of hiding behind, but also an email does allow you to order your thoughts.
I guess, yeah.
And present things with links to things and explain things. And it also, and this probably sounds a bit cowardly, but someone can't lose their rag and not let you explain something on there. Because a panicked client who feels their product had to be live because they need to be able to do that thing by X date.
That's true, actually.
What I tend to do is send an email and say, I'll follow this up with a phone call.
That's probably...
I'll phone you later, or yeah. I'll phone you tomorrow morning, or I'll phone you... When would be good to phone you about this?
Yeah.
And then they've got time to think about it. I say that like I regularly send out emails that are really going to let people down. What I mean is if there's something that changes maybe a delivery date, okay. or I hit a snag, or there's something that... Like the difficult conversations, for example, we're eventually going to have to charge more for this. And however we put it, the fact is... It's not going to be done for the money that we thought it might be able to, you thought you hoped it might be able to. If something just crops up or something ends up, there are times when you embark down a course, you take a course that doesn't work out. And a few times you have to have that terrible conversation, which gets a bit more dosh. Mm. And that I find is easiest explained through email and followed up with a phone call.
Okay. That's probably a good pattern, actually, because I guess we've all been in a situation where you've read the subject line of an email in the first couple of lines and you're like, what? And then by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I imagine if you had that as a phone call, then tempers might fly. I guess it depends on the kind of relationship you have with a client. If you've got somebody who's very calm and relaxed and lets you explain things, then...
Yeah, you don't always know that. So. Because people react really weirdly in certain circumstances. And also a lot of when you've built up a relationship with someone, that's fine. But if it's the first time, or it's a new client, people can get very funny when it comes to paying for things, can't they?
Yeah.
And people can get very funny when they're not paid for things. I have to try and stop myself getting really snotty if I feel that someone actually is just taking the mick. And yeah. I have to remember that, you know, they might be having problems themselves. They may not have had the chance to read emails.
That's true.
They may not have understood, or I may be expecting too much, but I have to stop myself getting really snotty.
Mm. Empathy, Ben.
I know. Empathy.
Reach out and touch somebody's hand. Or not, you know, if that's appropriate.
Well, that was our jukebox.
So I think we'll probably wrap up there. Again, just sort of to go back to what we were saying a minute ago, I guess our takeaway would be to admit your mistakes to your client, be honest, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, you've been in a situation where you've tried to fix it. And realising that everybody makes mistakes and you can bounce back.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so we will have a jukebox now.
Okay.
Another one.
Yeah. So for the jukebox this week, Mark always gives me a massive smile and a grin when I try and introduce anything. Because basically, if I try and do it, it goes wrong. He's the one who can do the introduction stuff and I just go off topic like I am now. And
It goes fine. It's just there is a moment when you break. There's a moment when you look down. Whenever you do an intro, the first bit is fine, and then you're like, oh, I'm doing an intro, I can't do intros. Yes. And it goes wrong.
Jukebox. Okay. What's your jukebox track?
My jukebox track is by Alt-J. It is Interlude 3. I quite like, and I think you like them as well, like little kind of almost like audio vignettes, if that's not the most pretentious way to describe them. And it's basically just like small little bits of instrumental music. I think you've got a whole playlist for them, haven't you?
It's called Interludes and Shorties, and I did mention it on a previous one of our tracks. I think is only about sort of 35 or 40 seconds long, and it's on that.
Yeah, and I've got a whole bunch of them that I really like that are on like a playlist. My Relative Past Consideration playlist is where I stage all the ones that are going on here. This is, which I'm sure you're really interested to know about. Anyway, but this is Interlude 3. It is only a few seconds. I think it's under a minute.
Right.
And I saw Alt-J at Green Man years ago, first time I ever heard of them, and they're brilliant. Really, really good. If you get a chance to go and see them live, they're really good. Both their albums are really interesting, a really interesting kind of... They're taking quite a lot of styles and stuff, and they seem like quite nice chaps as well. And I think Alt-J is that's a thing that you can do on... Is that something on the Mac?
It's a triangle sign. And if you do Alt-J, you get a triangle, don't you?
Ah, that's right. And they like they're into triangles for some reason. I think there's a...
Yeah, I've just done it.
Tessellate.
Alt-J.
Okay, Tessellate, their track. Tessellate, to talk about triangles. But anyway, so this is Interlude 3 by Alt-J from the album An Awesome Wave in 2012. So let's have a listen.
Okay.
Okay, that was my overly wordy description of a really, really short track. I think I talk more about short tracks than I do about long ones. I don't know if that's the right way around or the wrong way
around.
You
know how I tend to play the track while you're talking about it? I'm going to have to loop that one probably about three times. Or just, we'll see when it comes out in the edit what happens. Mm. Now, this is a weird jukebox. Again, a couple of weeks ago, I didn't have one. Now, I know who I want my jukebox to be by, but I haven't yet picked the track. So, I want to talk a little bit about Nathan Fake.
Okay, go ahead, man of mystery, Ben.
Yes. Double O Ben.
That would give it away, if that's your spy.
You know, we talked about Gold Panda, and last week, and you've got one coming up. Gold Panda, who is Derwin Schlecker? Listening to an interview with him, and that's always a great... Finding out artists' influences is obviously a great way of finding other artists you like, to find out who influences them. And he said, he's liked what certain people are doing. And Nathan Fake, who's a Norwich-based electronic music producer. So I then started listening to some Nathan Fake stuff and love it. Haven't quite picked which track I'm going to play you in just a moment yet, because some of it perfectly fits, but some of it is really quite heavy. So I'm not sure whether it's going to be suitable, but he's released quite a few albums now, and I love it. And so I'm going to play you something now, but neither of us know what it's going to be until it hits the edit.
That could be anything.
Well, that was hopefully nice. Mark isn't going to then veto it and take it off the playlist.
I don't know. We don't know what it is yet. That could be like 30 seconds of listening to a car starting or something like that. But
that's an idea.
I think Art of Noise did that, didn't they? They used to do that sort of thing. Yeah, we used to know that sort of thing. Anyway, so this is our podcast. A bit rambly. It's at the beginning, we didn't really know where we were going to be going with it. But yeah, we think it's been interesting, don't we?
Yeah, I've quite enjoyed just having a chat. This is like the old days. You know, like when we first started out, we didn't know what we were doing. Well, not saying we do now, but we just used to just chat about things.
Yeah. We're going to do... we've got plans for next year. We've got quite an interesting series of interviews that we're going to roll out. We'll let you know as soon as we have confirmation from a number of guests. One or two have confirmed. But we'll let you know about that. But our plan is to kind of do... one of those, and then maybe intersperse like one of those a month, and then intersperse it with like a bit more of a rambly kind of episode with the two of us. We're still probably going to stick to our once every 2 week schedule, but we'll see how things pan out.
About sustainable, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Whereas once a week was not sustainable
because we don't have any sponsorship or anything like that for the podcast, so it's kind of time out of work and whatnot. So, yeah, but we enjoy it though, don't we?
Yeah, love it. I'm wondering about sponsorship. Really should have stopped recording and just said goodbye and then we could carry on chatting about this. But I'm just wondering whether, would it ruin what we do? Would it put pressure on it?
I think I've been listening to the Boag Board podcast and they've just recently got sponsors and seems to be fine with it. He almost seems to chafe. He has a bit of fun with it, but I don't know whether it's that he's reluctant or if he's just having a bit of a laugh with it because they've never... had sponsors before, but then again, Andy Clark with the Stuff and not the Stuff and Nonsense, the Unfinished Business
podcast, yeah,
they've just decided to go without sponsors. We'll see what happens next year if we kind of get to the point where we can legitimately think about having sponsors. Then we'll let everybody know first, and we might try and I think Tool style, like that sort of middle segment, is kind of.
It's already geared up for. It's already geared up for sponsorship, isn't it?
Kind of is. So it might not. I mean, hopefully, it would make that much of a difference to the podcast. And I think we when we've discussed it, we've always thought that we would feature sponsors that we liked, stuff that we actually used, stuff that we actually think is useful. And hopefully it won't be like the wall of Squarespace ads that you seem to get, like when you listen to
Adam Buxton's new podcast, right at the end. If you haven't listened to it yet, which I think you should, listen right to the end because he does a Squarespace advert right at the end.
It used to be Audible. I remember about a year ago, every podcast was Audible. Mm-hmm. And now they all seem to be Squarespace. And it was one of the things that I worried about. You know, is Squarespace going to take a lot of our work? And I was like, oh, no, I'm sure it'll be fine. And then it's like, Squarespace, you don't need a developer. Just get a website with us. But it's not quite like that, is it? As we've discussed on previous episodes. Anyway.
Stop. Should we stop?
Let's stop. Thanks for listening. If you've made it this far, then we will come to your house and pin a medal on your chest for sticking with us. Stick it on with some Velcro, maybe. Wear a fuzzy jumper or something.
This coming from the man who bleaches his own hand.
in dire circumstances and regrets it. Was a lot of poop. Anyway, thanks for listening. It must have been a Rottweiler or something. But anyway, thanks for listening. This will be on the website with comments. runtofbars.uk with comments, a comment thread should, underneath it.
Maybe we should turn the comments off for this one.
Yeah, if you want to kind of comment and tell us how gross we are, then that is fine. Relative Paths on Twitter. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, on Stitcher or SoundCloud. Reviews are always welcome. And I think that's everything, isn't it?
It is. Thanks for listening.
And we'll be back in your ears in 2 weeks' time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Goodbye.